Welcome to Mike and Steve, a podcast in which Mike Carson and Steve Henry interview everyone who graduated in 1994 from Ohio's Cuyahoga Falls High School, one classmate at a time. Today's guest is Paul Hartsfeld. This interview was recorded August 18th, 2020.
Well, it's great. We're really happy to have today on the show Paul Hartsfeld. Thanks for coming. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dr. Paul Hartsfeld, please.
Sorry. Right.
Yeah, come on, right. Show some respect, man.
I know. Well, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to all that. But yeah, it's funny, you know, like when I see you, I don't really remember exactly like a lot about, you know, you in high school, but like when I see your face here, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember. Yeah. So.
You didn't know who we were going to be talking to until you saw him show up on Zoom.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Basically. No. I mean, I knew, but like, I didn't, when I saw you, it like brought back more, I guess, like seeing you move, you know, like you, like you're like seeing it, it brought back more memories of like mm-hmm. you in like high school and stuff.
I had like a flashback. I was reviewing the yearbook, which I do before these, and you were in the basketball picture.
Yeah.
Somehow that jogged my memory that I could see you playing basketball. I remember. I totally forgot as we were preparing for this, and I was thinking about you. I forgot about the basketball. Somehow,
yeah,
that was off my radar. But there you were. I think we were in a few classes together.
We probably were.
I seem to remember you in a science class with me, but I can't remember which. Maybe biology.
Yeah, I.
It's hard to tell.
Correct.
Yeah. You sat in front of me, so you didn't know what was going on. I was back there behind you.
So what was high school like for you?
I have good memories from high school as far as I can remember. I remember the basketball was probably my big thing that I was really into. I still keep up with Coach Manier to this day.
Oh, really?
You know,
really?
He runs Brookledge Golf Course, or he's big into doing stuff for the city now. So I run into him playing golf. I see him. I've gotten some golf lessons from him. I've gotten my son golf lessons from him. So I keep up with, it's sort of fun to keep up with him, you know, just text him every now and then and just say hi. And
yeah, that's, you know, cool.
Did he always run Brookledge Golf Course?
No, when Brookledge Golf Course really went from like just this run of the mill public course, yeah, to where it's pretty nice and like well run and the greens are like at a good above average public level. It was all sort of when he started making changes and running stuff. I don't know when that was.
Okay. I was going to say, I owe him an apology if he was, because my parents live right next to Brookledge Golf Course.
Oh, yeah?
I can't remember what hole. It's like one of the back nine core holes, I think. I can't even remember. But what I remember is before he took it over then, we lived on a dead-end street. And it was like the dead-end street would fill up with cars. Like everybody knew you could just like park there and walk straight onto the golf course on the 13th hole or whatever it was. Yeah. And there'd just be like these cars, and I would walk on there also and harass golf. Like when I was a really little kid, like I would just like go out there and one hole where we could hide in the woods, and it's like the green was below the surface of the tee.
Yeah.
So it's like if a golfer got a good shot and got it onto the green, they wouldn't actually see it land on, they wouldn't be able to see it. Huh. And we'd like run out there and move the ball around, take the total.
You would? You'd move the ball?
Yeah, total little shits. I mean, we were so bad. Yeah. And then we'd like hide in the woods and watch them scratch their heads. Like, I feel bad. I didn't do that a lot, but that was a few summers where that was like funny. The pastime.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, then at some point they fenced it off and it became much nicer.
Yeah.
and we couldn't do any of that. I was too old to do that anyway. I think that was, we were in high school, I think, around when that started happening.
That's great.
I recall. But anyway, sorry, that's a little aside.
Yeah.
But that's cool you keep in touch.
So yeah, was he like influential back then? Like, were you really close to him in high school and stuff?
No, I mean, just you spend, you know, a lot of practice time and, you know, conditioning and just, you just, I don't know. He wasn't like a mentor or anything, but he was just really good guy that, you know, you get a lot of respect for. Yeah. Just, I think naturally by playing for him and working with him for all that time we put in, you know?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Go ahead. Do you want me to go? I have a few more yearbook things I was going to ask you about.
Go.
I don't know if you remember any of these. You look like another one of our classmates who failed to turn in your list of things you participated in. So I don't know if you remember in the yearbook, like you, in this, for the seniors, there's the senior directory.
Yeah.
And you can look up theoretically any classmate and there's a list of what they participated in. It's okay. Actually a good way to sort of jog the memory, especially when we do these podcast episodes. But you didn't show up. You're not in there for whatever reason. They either lost you.
Huh.
We interviewed one person who just, I mean, she didn't do it because she had other things going on. But anyway.
I'm usually a really responsible type of guy, so they must have like lost it or something.
I think they lost. I'm pretty sure they lost it. So we can register a complaint.
Yeah. You can, on your, you know, behalf. Who you can register that complaint with?
Who?
Yeah. My sister. Because she was on the yearbook staff and, you know, a couple years behind us, but she was doing all the yearbooks, you know, so we should complain to her.
Okay. All right. Well, if you have contact info, I'll be happy to write a nasty letter. So you're not in there, but you do show up in the index. And so you have a basketball. You're on the varsity basketball team.
Yeah.
Senior year. Did you do that all 4 years? Basketball?
Freshman, junior, senior.
Took a year off.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you show up. You were on the student council.
Yep.
Treasurer.
Yeah, I think the senior year I was treasurer.
You're listed here as being the treasurer.
Yeah.
Do you have any memories of that? Was that a influential thing? Was that
a good memory? It was. It was a good time. You learned some responsibility of being taking care of money and other people's money and having to show up to meetings and, you know, sort of play politics and you know, just how to get along with other people, you know.
Get a little taste of the real world.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I have to admit, student council, I remember knowing about it, but I never got involved in that.
I think I was involved in it, you know, most of, at least sophomore, junior, senior year. I think I was in it every year, besides maybe freshman year. I don't remember.
Okay. Mike, are you there? You're there.
Yeah, I might have to stop my video. If it starts to get like, I don't know, if the internet connection gets flaky, I might just stop my video for a little. But I'm still here.
Just carry on. Let's carry on.
I might, my Steve Henry's face might show up where mine is, but it's me. It's just me.
It's really freaking me out.
Yeah. Two Steves on the call.
I already tried to boot you a few times. So then the other time you show up in the yearbook, Paul, is you got a leadership award. It doesn't say anymore. It's just like this page, highly honored. It shows, I remember the ceremony. It's like different people getting awards. I don't think there's a picture of you, but anyway.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
I don't remember that.
So you don't remember what it was about or anything? It's just...
No. Huh. Okay. Probably had something to do with student council, I would guess.
Yeah.
I remember sophomore junior year, I ran for class president.
Oh.
And I really campaigned hard. Like, I made signs and flyers in, like, me and Jeff Goes, if you remember Jeff Goes, we put big posters, like on the corner of the main high school building. You know, there were just all four corners. There were steps that you would go, you know, up from first to second to third floor. And on every one of those stairwells at every level, we put like this big Hartsfield for like 94, you know, class president or whatever. And like, I was running against Amber DeFago, who did no campaigning and absolutely crushed me in the vote, you know.
Yeah, that's, it would be tough to run against her, I think. I mean, she's, she was, you know, popular, nice. And,
Yeah, it was a tough one to run against, you know.
Yeah.
I don't remember who I voted for, to be honest. I don't know if I did vote.
I don't even remember what voting was like. Where did we go to vote?
I probably was done in homerooms, I would assume.
Ballots so in like, the homeroom.
So like every, like at the election day, they'd be like, okay, vote, check off who you want to be.
Yeah, I don't remember. I just remember I got crushed.
Did you actually know the vote total? Like it wasn't just.
No, but the student council, the teacher that, you know, was responsible for student council counted the votes. And I sort of was like, was it close? And he just sort of gave me this look. You don't want to know, you know?
Well, so how did you feel about it? Like, how was that? Was that?
No, it didn't. I mean, I was
devastated.
No, not at all. It was more like after I lost, I'm like, well, I give it a try. You know, you don't try, you can't succeed. But Jeff and I were running to those stairwells, getting those posters down. it was pretty funny.
What's weird is I remember voting for like the prom song. Like in homeroom, I totally remember this for some reason. Like homeroom, it felt like a really momentous occasion. Like this is our prom song. I think I did a write-in vote.
That sounds like something you would do.
And I remember that. I guess I remember because I did the write-in vote, and I thought I was real smarty pants. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember voting for, you know, actual democracy, like representatives, like the important stuff.
Why do you think you ran for that?
What?
For
class president, you mean?
Yeah.
I was into the leadership thing, and it was going to be I wanted to have it on my, you know, resume for college and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think you got the leadership award as a consolation prize?
I don't know. That was years later, so I don't know. That could
be. Oh, right. Maybe somebody remembered it. It was like, oh boy, you got to give this guy a bone.
You should have been like, Amber DeFay, hey, did you get one of these?
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, we're going to have to get Amber on here.
Next. Yeah, I know. So did you always, when in high school, were you like, I'm going to be a neurosurgeon when I grow up?
No, I was going to be I knew in junior high I was going to be a doctor.
Really? Wow.
But it was going to be orthopedics. I didn't even know, like I was in medical school. I didn't know that neurosurgery existed yet.
So wait, in junior high school, you wanted to get into orthopedics?
Yeah.
What? Why?
I don't know. I liked sports. I liked playing sports and I wanted to be a doctor, and orthopedic surgeons took care of like sports stuff.
Wow. Well, that's cool. You knew so early. Was anybody in your family in the medical field?
Nope. Wow. Nope.
Cool. Well, so
did you watch St. Elsewhere?
No, but in college, all the hot girls and me in the dorm would watch ER on Thursday night.
Yeah, me too.
Like my in with the hot chicks. Yes.
They're just there for George Clooney, man.
It's yeah, like, correct.
It was a pointless endeavor.
So it seems like high school for you is see, I mean, I, you, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, so you were into sports and you were into leadership stuff and you did good in school, and it seems like you, yeah, you like, you probably had really good grades, right? I guess.
Yeah.
So it, what would you classify yourself? I mean, it doesn't seem like you were a nerd, like somebody, like a nerd, like you played basketball and stuff, but do you think you were a jock, popular? Like,
I don't think I was really good enough in sports to be considered a jock. Like I could make the team, but I wasn't like the superstar. I was there, you know, for, cause I worked hard and, you know.
Were you satisfied with your role in high school? Were you happy there? Were you happy in high school?
Yeah, I had a good time.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. That's great. That's great, man. I wish I did.
I feel like making varsity basketball. I think you're being a little modest. I mean, like, I played basketball. Making varsity basketball, I think, is a pretty good accomplishment.
Yeah. My dad, like, went from like elementary school, we'd go to, you know, the high school basketball and football games and all that. And I was like, one of the things I wanted to do, I wanted to wear that black and gold one day,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I guess I got fortunate enough to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Cool.
You do seem to defy category though. That's a good question. Maybe everybody does from this perspective.
Yeah.
But
well, not everybody. Some people define the category, maybe.
That's true.
But
that's a good point.
So, okay, well, could you give us a brief timeline of events in your life since high school?
Yeah. I went to Miami. And from Miami, got into medical school. I went to, it was Medical College of Ohio. When I went there, it's now University of Toledo School of Medicine.
Okay.
And then from Toledo, moved north an hour and a half to Detroit and did my neurosurgical residency at Henry Ford Hospital in downtown Detroit. Then from there, my first job in neurosurgery was in suburban Atlanta. And we were there for a couple of years and then had the opportunity to come back to the Akron area. And so we came back and been here since 2011, I think. Something okay. like that. Yeah.
Cool. And you... You're married and have kids?
Yeah. Yeah. He just started at Walsh. He's a freshman at Walsh.
Wow.
Cameron. And Ariane is 8 and is going to start 3rd grade. Yeah. Whenever Highland starts schools again.
They're still figuring it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what got you into neurosurgery, like away from orthopedic?
Well, in anatomy class in med school, well, first of all, my undergraduate degree at Miami was in psychology. And I didn't like the counseling side of psychology. I liked the biopsychology, more the neuroanatomy and brain function parts of psychology. And so getting into med school, in anatomy class, like I just completely didn't have any interest in this muscle connects to this bone and makes it in this tendon and this is the ACL of the knee or whatever. But I was like, just loved the neuroanatomy and, you know, tracing out the nerves in the body and the different areas of the brain and what they control and function. And then I found out there was this specialty that operated on the brain. I'm like, that's what I'm going to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
I've had surgeries performed by neurosurgeons and orthopedic surgeons. that's I got the whole thing.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, what's it like to be a neurosurgeon?
It's pretty busy. You know, there's not too many of us around for the population of the United States. It's probably fewer neurosurgeons than what could be used.
Which is wow.
Good, because I mean, it's good because you have good job security is what I mean. You know, you're always in demand, and you can have a job wherever you want it, wherever you want to live. Someone would be very happy to have a neurosurgeon in their hospital. And,
wow. Cool.
You know, it's a little bit stressful surgical subspecialty, but, you know, it's like, I wouldn't do anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine it's stressful. I mean, I was just talking with my wife about it, and I was like, you know, we get stressed out, like sometimes at night, like falling asleep. We're like, man, how am I going to make it through the day tomorrow if I don't sleep? But like, you must be,
you have to be able to function on no sleep to be a neurosurgeon.
Really? Because yeah.
Sometimes you don't get to sleep.
Yeah. Wow. So are your hours still crazy? Are they crazy now?
They're not now in practice. They're a lot better than residency, which was really long. You know, it's like living at the hospital for 120 hours a week and come home every now and then. Wow. When you go, you know, it's like, oh, I slept for a couple minutes and now it's back to work, you know.
Jeez. So,
wow. But it was worth it in the end, but it was it's a hard one. It's the hardest residency to get through, probably, because it's so long and there's so few residents that there's a lot of call to be covered and few people to cover it.
How long is that residency?
7 years.
So 7 years.
Yeah.
120 hour weeks at the hospital.
Yeah.
The whole oh my God, man.
Yeah.
Did you ever second guess or question?
No.
Wow.
No, this was it was what I wanted to do.
That's good.
And I knew what I was getting into. So.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, how's it been through this pandemic stuff? Because I'm sure, like, from what I know about neurosurgery, you already have to be like super careful about germs and everything like that. But now,
it changed for what I do in that one. We just didn't do anything for a while. You know, when everything sort of went shut down, we just, you know, if it wasn't an emergency, I had a lot of elective surgery just get put off. I'm still catching up on that stuff, kind of stuff now. But the thing that really changed is, you know, I'm used to seeing the patient, their family in the office, having like a thorough discussion about what's wrong with them or what needs to be done or whatnot. And then seeing those same family members in the pre-op area right before they take them back and then go to see them in the waiting lounge, you know, after surgery's over. And now if they let a family member in the hospital, it's one, or you're just calling someone on the phone. It became a lot less personable, you know?
Yeah.
It was the biggest change, I think, neurosurgically.
I'm trying to, like, I'm just like imagining when family members of mine have been in surgery, and that must be really tough, because that's like seeing the surgeon come out and like give the rundown of how everything went.
Yeah.
Was like, obviously it's a big moment. It's like that.
It's really unusual to just call someone on the phone and like everything went fine, and they'll call you when they're allowed to come home or you got to come pick them up or whatever. You know, it's a lot less personable, and you feel like you're not providing the standard of care when you can't talk to someone face to face all the time, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if they're not doing well, or if, you know, the patient and family's not there for you to talk to, then you're calling them on the phone, and it's, you know, it's not the way I like to do things, but that's the way life is right now, you know?
So that must've been strange when everything stopped, because you have probably been used to like having a completely full schedule. And then
I just played, I didn't, played Xbox and all the stuff that I hadn't done in years, you know?
Yeah. Wow. So that was like for a few months or so?
Yeah. It was like, I don't know, sometime in, I forget when we went into quarantine, but it was like mid-May when we started doing stuff again. So it was like lots of Legos, put a lot of Legos together, put a big Yoda together. Nice. Put an Aston Martin DB5 together. I think there was something else I built.
Out of matchsticks.
Yeah. It was like Legos and video games is all I did.
That's life.
Yeah.
Sounds good. What hospital do you work out of then? Or hospitals?
Yeah, pretty much all of them in Akron I have privileges at. I'd say most of my cases I do at Western Reserve.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I bet Akron General is number two. Probably do a couple of cases a month at Medina. That's the house, the hospital I live closest to is Medina, but I don't have a lot to do there. Mm-hmm. And then I cover trauma call with my partner at Mercy Hospital in Canton. So
okay.
I may do nothing in a week there. There may be a couple bad traumas that you end up, you know, going down and dealing with at some point during the week. Just okay. Hit and miss, you know.
It's crazy you're back in the area. Like, was that, what drew you back to the area? And was it just family or was there any, I mean?
Well, yeah, my wife's family lives here. My mom and dad still lived here. And when I was a resident, I met one of the four neurosurgeons that were in Akron at the time. I met him and it's like, I'd like to come back to the area. And so we sort of go out to dinner anytime I was in town. And then there were various political things where it didn't work out to come back when I finished as a resident. Mm-hmm. And we ended up in Atlanta. And he called out of the blue one day and is like, hey, you know, got this opportunity if you want to come back. And I was like, well, thanks. Thanks, but no thanks. And then just sort of things in Atlanta, the partners I was with were not good. it was an amazing place to live and a horrible job to have. And so I took a chance and came back, and it turned out it's worked out really well.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what have been some defining moments in your life since high school or some struggles that you've overcome?
You know, just that 7-year residency is really, that was a hard one to get through.
Yeah.
It was worth it, but it takes a toll on you. I'd say that was the biggest struggle, was just, every day up at 4:30 at the hospital by, you know, 5:30 and then,
I can, yeah, man. I can.
And you don't know when you're coming home, you know.
Yeah, geez. I mean, that it's crazy. That does it have to be that way? I mean, it seems like.
Well, towards the end of the residency, they instituted the 80-hour work week for residents. Well, you do 80 hours, but by then I was like chief resident, and there's no 80 hours for the chief resident. They my hours just kept going, you know, because. As chief, you're on call like every other night, every other weekend. For me, it was 18 months in a row.
Wow. So. Yeah, I mean, just all that work, but also the work you're doing, I'm sure it was like, must have been hard.
Sometimes. Yeah, it's, yeah, the,
That wasn't the
Detroit with the gangs. Like, there's like high energy bullets flying at heads and spines a lot, you know. You know, the disadvantages that's going to keep you busy. The advantage of it is when you're done, like, you've seen it all and you're pretty comfortable dealing with a lot of that stuff, you know.
So that, you don't think that was the hard part, is the, you don't think it was necessarily the stuff, the cases that you had, and it was more just the work, like just constant work.
The constant work, and like, if you're sick and you got the flu, you're not taking off. You're going to take call and stay up all night with the flu, you know, and you're going to do that every third or fourth night for, you know, multiple years in a row. That's the hard part, is like, there's a couple residents on service and there's no one to take your place if you're sick. You know, you're going to show up to work regardless, and it's your turn to take call. When you're sick, you're still taking call. Wow. That's what makes it hard, because, you know, everybody gets sick and everybody has times where they don't feel like going to work, and, you know, you get through it.
How do you think that affected you? Like, how do you think it's changed you? Like,
well, it changed me from in high school. Like, I didn't like stay, and even in college, I didn't like to stay up late. I didn't go out. I was like, got to be in bed in time to get up for class and all that. And then you get into residency, it's like, you're staying up all night, every third night, you know, you're third or fourth night, and you got to get used to being up at hours that you're not used to being up. And it like changes your physiology. Like, you're like, I still, you know, to this day, like, I can fall asleep at the drop of a hat and wake up and be instantly ready to make a life altering decision for somebody, you know?
Wow.
Just your body, your brain gets trained through all that stuff, you know, to instantly be able to be awake and be coherent.
Do you think it was like traumatizing to you?
I don't remember being traumatized. I remember being like, wow,
sorry if that's a weird question.
I'm really tired, like, you know?
Yeah. I'm just trying to, yeah, it's like, I guess it's hard for me to imagine. I never had to go through it, so it's hard for me to imagine. But like 7 years, yeah, I guess 7 years of that over and over again is, I could see how that, but it's still, yeah, I guess it's something that's so hard. It's hard to know when you haven't been through it.
Yeah, even to this day, like, I naturally wake up at like 4:30.
Really?
You know, I typically can go back to sleep because I don't have to get up that early anymore, but it's still like part of you, you know?
Yeah.
I naturally wake up at 4:30 PM. Like, if there weren't an alarm.
Yeah.
I'm going to sleep till 4:30. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
When you wake up, can you make a life-altering decision at 4:30?
I can't make any decision whatsoever. Like, no matter how much sleep I have or what the decision is.
Yeah. No matter how good I am, I cannot do that. Like, if I've had caffeine, I can still not make that decision.
At the top of my game, I cannot decide whether to have a burger or a hot dog at a cookout. I cannot do it. No chance of making that decision. No, that's seriously really impressive. I mean, it's like your brain works different. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, good job going through that, man. Good job getting through that. We're proud to have you, man. Part of our class.
Yes.
Yeah. What other classes out there? All you other listeners out there, your class. Do you have a neurosurgeon in your?
No.
Well, we do. Right here. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. Am I embarrassing you?
No.
Okay. You're embarrassing me a little bit.
So are you ready for the next segment?
Sure.
It's called Make the Sound with Your Mouth Only. And we play a sound. It's like a little game, a little icebreaker game at the end of, even though we should do it, probably do it at the beginning. But it's we make a sound, and then we all have to try to make that sound just using our mouth only.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll play a sound, and then Steve will go first, and we'll listen to him try to make this sound. And then you could go next. We'll listen to you, and then I'll go, and then we'll judge who did the best.
Okay. You ready?
Okay, I'll play the sound twice. First, and then Steve, you can go. Here we go. Let's see if I can do this right.
What is that?
Okay, sound like a dying duck. I'll give you guys a hint of what it is. It's a hippopotamus. Okay, here.
That helps. I got this now.
Yeah,
you should not have said that.
Yeah, I'll play it one more time. Here you go, Steve.
There's a little bit at the end I just don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't even know what's going on.
I know.
Okay, right. Steve.
No, 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 no.
Not bad. Not bad, man.
Thank you.
Good. Pretty good.
Thanks.
Okay. Can I hear it again?
Yeah, yeah. I'll play it one time and then you can go. Okay, here we go.
It sort of fades out. Like,
yeah, it sort of fades out.
I don't know what happens. It's like it overwhelms the microphone or something. Seriously. Can you try like hold it a little farther away from the microphone, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like seriously, like it seems like it overwhelms and feedbacks or something.
Okay, let's try like this.
It's still good. I don't know what's going on. The first time it was clear.
The first time was good, and it's dying after this. It's a dying hippopotamus.
Yeah.
So.
Not bad. That's a pretty good hippopotamus impersonation. I'll play it one more time.
Does the hippopotamus have a hairball or?
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a huge hairball.
Is it Hungry Hippos game or something? What?
No,
what's the context of this thing?
It's an app of animal sounds.
Oh.
Oh. So,
yeah. I thought the hippopotamus was pretty good.
So. That's pretty good. That was a good one. Good selection.
So who won?
I think Steve.
I was going to say Paul. I mean,
nobody said me. Nobody says me.
Who are you going to say? Might as well just say yourself.
Nah. Yeah. I don't know.
Mike, you really got into it, though.
Yeah.
I did?
Yeah, it seemed like you. Yours was different, I think, than ours.
I was trying to, like, imagine being a hippopotamus.
There's something convincing about yours. Paul's was very earnest also. I mean, I don't know. It's like, I think Paul really went for it.
Yeah. Paul went.
He came pretty close. I don't know what I did.
Okay.
It was a close one. It was a good one.
Well, hey, Paul, thanks a lot for doing the show and taking time.
Thanks for having me.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. I had one question.
Yes.
Is it true you were on a billboard also?
Yeah.
What's the story with? I had to ask about the billboard before we.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah, I think Tracy mentioned it to us that she saw, like, I think Tracy Marzich, who was Dugrich, saw you or something. And she said, oh, yeah, Paul's on a billboard. You should talk to him.
Yeah. So my partner that I came up and was moved up here and worked with from, I don't know, 11 to 18 or something like that. He was, he had like this freak accident at his house where he got really badly injured.
Okay.
And our practice, like is he ever going to be able to practice? He's lucky to be alive, much like if he's going to ever practice again. And that practice closed. And then all of a sudden I was like a free agent, and I had like every hospital in town, like calling and, you know, wanting me to come work for them. Mm-hmm. And, so I eventually settled on Western Reserve, and they put out this giant like marketing campaign where I ended up with my face on billboards like in Canton, in Cuyahoga Falls, in Ravenna, in Akron. Like, I don't even know where they all were, but the one that I always saw was right by the hospital. It was right by the Blue Door. And the Blue Door, if you haven't eaten there, is like the most fantastic place.
I don't think I've been to the Blue Door.
Oh, I've never heard of it. Brunch, right on the corner of State and Broad Boulevard. You can't miss it. Literally, it's got a Blue Door.
I feel like I've driven by it a million times, but I've never gone in there.
Hole in the wall.
Yeah.
Best brunch food ever.
Okay.
Chicken and waffles to die for.
Oh, that sounds good.
Anyway, the billboard is right on State Road there, and you'd sit down at the table at eating at the Blue Door, and you'd look out the window and you just see my own image on the billboard. It was like, it got to be a BMI. It stayed up for a long time. And then when my new partner started there, then they took that billboard down and they had a billboard of him and I up there. So I was like on all these billboards for like a year around the Akron area, you know.
It must be surreal.
Was it? Were they like, look? Were they like, look who we have on? We have Paul Hart. Was it like that?
That's basically what they were saying. Yeah.
That's awesome, though.
That's cool, man.
That's amazing. You're like LeBron James.
No.
We got Paul.
Witness. Everyone's a witness to this. That's actually, I mean.
So were people like recognizing you and stuff?
Like people would, you know, to this day, they're like, you're the guy that was on that billboard. I'm like, yeah, that was me.
Mm-hmm. Well, here I am.
Yeah.
I told my wife about the billboard before. I was like, just like right before this, she always asked me who I'm interviewing, what their story is. I was like, oh, yeah, I think he's a neurosurgeon. And he was on a billboard. Cuyahoga Falls in the Akron area. And she's like, he must not be a neurosurgeon. Like, she was convinced you must be like a plastic surgeon. She's like, it's always the plastic surgeons and cosmetic surgeons who are going to be on billboards. And I'm like,
it was crazy. Like, you know, the hospital CEO was like, yeah, we're going to do this big marketing campaign. I'm like, okay, you know, that seems reasonable. You want the advertise. And he's like, yeah, there's going to be billboards and like, we made videos. It was crazy. Like,
wow.
Were you in any like TV commercials or anything?
No, thank God. But we did make videos in there. I think they're on the practice website, you know, where patients come and like get to know the doctor or whatever. And they can click on these videos because people frequently say, I watched your video. And then I just, you know, fake it. Like, oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah. That video. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should try to find one of those and put it on the blog post.
I would love that. Or if you have a photo of the billboard.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some people found them on, put them on Facebook. I don't know if they're still there, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look around. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't, that's fine. I
think it's a great story for the blog.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool, man. So you're like, that'd be cool to be, like your kids be like, look, there's daddy.
Yeah. The kids did find that very entertaining, you know. Drive by the billboard again, mom. You know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's great.
Cool. Well, yeah, is there anything else you want to add or anything?
No, thanks for having me. It was really cool to
catch up. It's great to talk to you, and I'm glad. It's great that you've done, it seems like you're doing great things, man. Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah,
I'm certainly happy how things ended up, and what I wouldn't take a different job or a different job. This is what I was meant to do, and I like doing it.
Awesome. Yeah. Our class, that's the one thing I love about doing this is like, everybody we interview is like I think we have a great class. Like people are, awesome.
Interesting stories, different life paths, but
yeah,
all doing really cool things.
Mm-hmm. And like good people.
Good people, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks again for taking the time to do this.
And, yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
All right, man. Good talking to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Okay.
Okay.
You too.
Talk to you.
Okay, see ya. Mike and Steve is a production of Mike and Steve LLC and was produced by Mike Carson and Steve Henry with generous assistance from Tracy Marzich. You can find Mike and Steve at mikeandsteve.com and also on iTunes and Stitcher. Please like, subscribe, rate, and review if you see so fit. You can also leave comments, questions, or messages to include in future episodes on our voice mailbox at 330-731-1335. Once again, that number is 330-731-1335. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great week.